Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tony Dunn, ain't nothing to it but to do it, brother. Let's roll.
In a world where Carolina Panthers fans have an insatiable thirst for Panthers news and opinions, only one podcast roars ferociously. It's the C3 Panthers Podcast.
Welcome back, Panther fans. It feels like I just left you. I just left you last night after an incredibly heated debate and a long show with a ton of calls, a ton of viewers. We had a great time. Welcome back to the C3 Panthers Podcast, this week's episode of the C3 Beat Check, where we put our ear to the ground, check the latest headlines with beat reporters and podcasters around the NFL. Tonight, Cody, we got a great show. We've got the long-term beat reporter for the Carolina Panthers, now with The Athletic, the number one site for long-form, close, thoughtful, intellectual content when it comes to the team. Perfect for our type of viewers who cannot get enough. Joe Person with The Athletic is about to join us right now. And at 8:20, we've got Will McFadden from Believe in Falcons podcast, as well as writer for the Falcoholic, to help us preview the Thursday night blackout matchup. And boy, I felt like I left you with a black eye last night after we were fighting nonstop, Cody. Welcome back.
You always think that. Two, it's never true. And yes, man, we're always excited to talk to Joe Person, man. He has his ear close to the ground of the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, it's always fun to pick his brain. What a weird season we're in the middle of, huh? Man, only being two games out of first place. Yeah, after the shellacking that we took, it's weird to kind of know where we're going. We think Joe's going to help out with that tonight. But Tony, as always, you know that we're going to do this with the best Panther fans in all of YouTube, man. Action Jack, our boy AJ Drew, Michael Davis, Panther Pickle, the real AP, Tim Tizzy, Tony Dunn, ain't nothing to it, but to check the beat on the C3 check. Let's roll.
Let's roll. The one thing, one last housekeeping thing before we get into everything is during the bye week, usually after every game, we have a big post game show. It's one of the biggest shows of the week. This year during the bye week, we're starting a kind of a new tradition we hope to establish, where we support one Panther kind of founded by a player charity. And we're going to help this year. What we're going to do is, and it's, it's a collaboration. I don't want to call it a partnership because this is not about us, but the Bradley and Nikki Bozeman Foundation and the Sync Snack Box charity drive is what we're going to support this year. So guys, during the bye week, normal time for the post game show, 4:30, I think is what we're going to aim for. We'll be pushing that all week in the lead up to the bye week. We're going to have trivia. We're going to have games. We're going to have guests and things like that. And all the donations to the show, we're not even going to take them directly. We're just going to give you the link so that you can support this foundation. Cody, let's go ahead and bring in our guest, Joe Person, The Athletic. Welcome to the C3 Panthers podcast.
What's going on, guys?
Welcome back, man. What a slog this season has already become, Joe.
That's a good word for it, man. It's unfortunate. My first year on the beat, I think I've told you guys this before, but it was 2010. So y'all remember that, man. 2-14. Matt Moore was going to start. Jimmy Kloss. Moore got hurt. They threw Jimmy Kloss into the Wolves. Tony Pike, I think, started one game, or at least he played a lot. I mean, it was bad. It was worse than this year. But it's never a lot of fun when you're going through this in any capacity, a fan, a writer, and certainly the players, that, you know, it's rough on them more so than anybody.
Yeah, I know. We've felt like we've been, almost an unprecedented growth over the last 2 years, and we're trying to keep up that momentum. But gosh, we're trying to find creative ways to generate intelligent conversation and excitement. So thank you for being a part of that. And I guess the one thing is, you mentioned in your story, and we're going to feature a couple of your headlines tonight, Randy Fasani, the last quarterback that had a zero QBR or something like that. Tony Pike. Is he like our, what is the guy, the Sam, not Sam Ellinger, that's the Colts guy. Who's the guy that DJ Moore didn't know his name? I don't even know his name.
It was Nick Eason. And Nick. I'm sorry, Jacob Eason.
There we go.
And Jacob Eason is no longer on the team. He's a practice squad guy. I actually liked Jacob Eason when he was at Georgia. He followed Jacob Fromm. And then I think when Justin Fields was going to come in initially, Eason transferred to Washington. Anyway, Jacob Eason, now I want to call him Nick Eason. Jacob Eason's time in Charlotte was short. And he got in the end of the Rams game, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, and he was actually kind of, I mean, like, I guess it was hard to.
He was able to move the ball. Looked,
is he our Tony Pike, though? Because wasn't Tony Pike real tall?
Yes, Tony Pike was tall. Tony Pike's name came up when we were at Cincinnati last week because I think he is hosting a sports talk or doing something in Cincinnati. And we were talking about him. I think Darren Gant and I in the press box were having some Tony Pike flashbacks. Again, that was that 2010 season that was rough.
I know. We're in the midst of it. All right, let's start with so we're just going to go kind of highlight a couple of your stories here. I want to encourage everybody to go support The Athletic. This is particularly – I got a great question to end this interview about the blue checks at the end. Right now, the story that you came out with after this, I've been calling it humiliating. You used the term pitiful performance. The headline was Flat Panthers need to pick up the energy after a pitiful performance versus the Bengals. And you wrote this, Joe, but Walker was hardly the only problem. Right tackle Taylor Moten had a pair of false start penalties. The defensive line couldn't stay out of the neutral zone. That's a YGM reference there. And no one could tackle Joe Mixon, who set a Bengals record with 5 touchdowns. The 6'1", 220-pound Mixon had scored 4 touchdowns and 113 rushing yards before halftime. They were the third-worst rushing offense, then proceeded to gash the Panthers for 241 yards on the ground, 3 times what they had been averaging. You guys can read the full story at The Athletic. My question to you is this, is that after the firing of Matt Rhule and the appointment of Steve Wilks and the kind of the team seemed to coalesce behind him, the fan base, we garnered a little bit of excitement in a couple of ways. We had Jonathan Stewart on the podcast. He referenced the 2014 season over and over and over again and how Steve Wilks was a part of that. We saw them fight hard. It wasn't a bad game against the Rams. They just didn't have any offense. But then they come out, they beat the Bucks, put up an impressive performance from the Falcons. And we're sitting here going, man, maybe we have this outside shot to back in like 2014. This loss was so bad, Joe, against the Bengals. It really just was like getting the wind knocked out of you for the fan base. That's how our fans have reacted. How is the team, do you think, responding to such a difficult beatdown?
You know, I really think that having a Thursday night game after that beatdown, as you so appropriately called it, I think that's been good. Like, okay. They didn't have time. If they wanted to wallow in their sorrows, they didn't have time. Like,
well, that's a
there
good
were
point.
Guys, I think it was P.J. Walker was telling us, and it wasn't just P.J. The plane lands, I think, around 7:30 Sunday night, gets back from Cincinnati. I guess the bus is another half an hour. So, they get back to like Bank of America Stadium about 8 o'clock at night after having just had gotten their asses kicked. And some of them went back in the stadium and started Sunday night. I don't know if they were in there breaking down tape of the Falcons, but I think like in PJ Walker's case, he was in there getting treatment. I don't know if he was like in a hot tub, cold tub, but just that whole process. I think Shaq might have said something about doing that, but all of which I say to make the point that I do think it was good to, if you're going to have that kind of performance, at least you could kind of flush it in a hurry and like, you know, like, hey, we got to play again in four yeah. nights. Let's get going.
Excellent point. I hope Steve Smith was waiting for them at the ice tubs going ice up.
So, Joe, I'm gonna jump in here. You know, I mentioned at the start of the show how weird it is that we're not far out of first place. Like, I mean, the NFC South is within range for the Carolina Panthers, as odd as that is to say. However, we also have number two pick in the draft. There was a lot of news and rumors around potential trades that the Panthers could have taken part in, but opted not to. Notably, Brian Burns to the Rams for a 2024 and 2025 first round pick. Then we heard, and I don't know if this was ever confirmed or not, but the Green Bay Packers were interested in DJ Moore and were potentially willing to give up a first round pick for him. When you're Scott Fitterer in your second year, what do you think goes into the decisions to not potentially get an extra three first round picks in a year that most fans might say, hey, this is the definition of a tanking year? What would you say went into that decision?
Yeah, it's a great question. And talking with people in the organization, here's the best way I could describe it. They already are hurting at the edge rusher spot opposite of Brian Burns. Like last year, they had two pretty darn good ones with Reddick and Burns. This year, they've got Burns. That's it. And so you get rid of Burns. Like Etor Gross-Matos, it hadn't happened. Like, he looks like a situational type of guy. He does not look like, you know, a difference maker at edge rusher. So you get let's start with Burns. You get rid of him. And you're right, man. It's tempting. You get those draft picks. But then you need to go somehow find – two edge rushers. So you're either using one of those draft picks on an edge guy, and as you said, they're future draft picks anyway. Maybe you use one to trade up in this year's draft. But the point being is, like, at some point you've got to hold on to some of your assets, or you're gonna be just taking all these flyers and on first round picks. Some of them might work out and some might not. You know, Burns and DJ Moore are good players. Like, let's take CJ Henderson, for instance. There's another former first round pick. He washed out in Jacksonville. So a lot of times we get enamored with the picks, and I get it, man. Like, that picks are gold if you do something good with them.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have a problem with them holding on to those guys. I would have liked to have seen them try to move somebody else, you know, maybe like a Shaq or a Dante, just because, you know, Shaq's a potential salary cap casualty guy anyway this offseason. And Dante struggled with injuries, but they end up holding on to these guys. I'm fascinated. You brought up a good point. How weird is it? This team's two games out of first place and one spot, half game really, behind Houston for the first round pick.
It's so bizarre.
Crazy. That's crazy. And in some ways, it's even more peculiar than 2014. You know, it's just, you know, from the jump, it's just been really bad.
It has. Yeah. I'm fascinated. I'll be honest. I was having this discussion with my editor this week, and I want to see how it goes tomorrow night, you know, against the Falcons. But if they lose again, I think we're about ready to turn the page and start really hammering coverage on, you know, the number one pick, draft positioning. guys like Derek Brown, who has really been a positive. Like, there are guys on this team to build around. And it's just going to be, you know, another loss, and they get to, what would that be, 2-8. I think we're just going to start, the Athletic at least, is going to do a lot of looking ahead type stories, because I think fans at that point will be more interested in the draft pick than how many games behind the Buccaneers.
Yeah, we have one more loss in us, and that, and then – I mean, that I felt like the Bengals one was deflating enough. This is another division. This will give us some divisional hope in some weird way, you know, that you could, if we won it in a black, and we get the black on black, where we'll talk about that. Let's go to the next story, Cody. The next story that was up on, that Joe put up on the Athletic, was Panthers sticking with QB fresh off a 0 quarterback rating. Is this what tanking looks like? And you quoted what caught my eye. What's interesting is, one, is that that was the story coming out, or out of the Sunday, is who's going to start on Thursday, particularly because Baker had probably his best half of the year in the background of just a disaster. And PJ was named, or they announced that they're going to go with PJ on Thursday. And Steve Wilks said, when asked about it, he said, "I'm not going to get into the state of how guys handle certain situations. We talked as men, and I told Baker exactly what I thought. I would say Baker's a competitor just like Sam. They all want to start. They all want to play. I know he's going to continue to be a pro as he's been." We talked about this last night on the C3 Panthers podcast. To me, the stories, I saw one person report that Baker was not available for media availability. And what's the story here with Baker? Is Baker, do you think he's upset that after the performance, what he believes probably he lost his starting job to injury, which is not, it's kind of fake. I mean, he was doing so bad, he was going to lose a job anyway, but, he comes back and has his best performance of the year. And then he's not named the starter. And then you referenced in your article, just like we talked about last night, there's some conditional with the draft picks that go into the trade. What's going on with Baker? Is he upset? And is there more to this story behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think he is, honestly. I mean, we talked to him each of the last 2 weeks, and he really was positive. He had a lot of good things to say. He's like, "Look, I'm waiting on my chance. We all want to play." Well, then he gets his chance. And look, I know the Bengals in a prevent defense and playing some younger guys, but still, Baker went out there and moved the ball, directed 3 touchdown drives out of his 4 possessions. I'm sure he showed up Monday morning thinking he was going to be the starter, and he wasn't. Yeah, I do think, I mean, some of this, of course, is reading the tea leaves, but I don't think it was an accident that we didn't see him in the locker room. And it was a short week, but we still got to talk to everybody else that we wanted to talk to Monday or Tuesday. And I think Baker, and probably maybe it was smart. Like, look, I think maybe he's having this conversation with his agent or his wife or his whoever he confides in. Like, better to say nothing than to go out and, you know, say what he really wanted to say. But it's going to be interesting to watch, because if he's not starting this week, guys, off of that performance, then I don't know. I think it's going to take PJ and Sam Darnold to get hurt. Excuse me. If he's not playing this week, when's he going to play again? Unless both those guys.
Eason first. No, it's a good point. Good point. And man, a perfect ending to a awfulness of this quarterback craziness that's happened for the last few years. Up, Cody.
It's definitely a peculiar story to watch. Joe, we just recently saw Steve Wilks fire 2 coaches on this staff. And, you know, last night on our Tuesday podcast, we had this discussion on, what's really happening here? I mean, were these guys just kind of the scapegoat, or the Fall Guys for such a bad performance against Cincinnati. You know, it almost had feels of when Matt Rhule fired Joe Brady the first time. You know, that things just weren't going well and a change had to be made. What do you think went into the decision-making process with Steve Wilks and decide to fire Pasqualoni and Bowers, I believe?
No, yeah. What's his name? Eddie something.
Evan Cooper.
Evan Cooper. Evan Cooper.
I think a couple things were at work, guys. I first of all, Steve Wilks comes in here. He gets rehired in January. You know, Rhule made a couple other changes, but mostly his staff was still guys he'd work with in Baylor or Temple or both, in the case of Evan Cooper and Phil Snow and Ed Foley. And so I don't think – I mean, those three guys I just mentioned, of course, Foley and Snow, they were the first two to go. I mean, Wilks takes over. I mean, it's already a difficult situation. I think he looked around the coach's room and said, you know, some of these guys are Matt Rhule's best friends. I don't think this is a good working environment for me to keep these guys. And, you know, I'm sure scheme played a part of it too. But and then, yes, to your point, would he have fired these guys if they had beaten Cincinnati? Probably not. But I also think behind the scenes, Wilks is sort of like trying to surround himself with the guys that he knows well, that he trusts, just like all these coaches do. That's why Matt Rhule brought those guys with him. They're guys whose opinions he trusts. And who's, you know, who believes they're competent, very good football coaches. Steve Wilks might have a different opinion. And so now we're seeing just they're getting like they had a big coaching staff already, like 20 dudes. But it's starting to get a threat there over there on Mint Street.
Somebody, two things about that is I love this comment. They said that firing these guys is like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I love that comment. The other one, though, that stuck out to me because Paul Pasqualoni was the new guy, kind of. He's not the new guy. He's looked 100. I think that's how you described him, too. He looks actually younger now than he looked with Detroit, which is, if you look at the pictures from him in Detroit, he looked older. Someone said that he and Rhule have connections at Syracuse, though.
Yeah, they go back. I don't think they were ever at Syracuse together, but here's the thing. If we're being honest, Paul Pasqualoni was like an advisor at the University of Florida last year. He was not even an on-the-field coach. Same thing with Ben McAdoo. Ben McAdoo was like a consultant
for the Cowboys.
Yes. I mean, he wasn't doing on-field coaching. When Matt Rhule opened up the, you know, what, like, and I think Tepper told him, hey, you need to shake up your coaching staff. I think he had a really, I know he had a hard time getting guys in here. I think there were people that turned him down right and left because they very astutely thought this was a sinking ship and I don't want to move my family and, you know, new schools and buy a house.
Or put my name on it.
Thank you. Like they didn't. And so, like, for instance, Pep Hamilton is one example of many. Pep Hamilton was still with the Texans, and he's a Charlotte guy. He likes Steve Wilks. He's a Charlotte native. He didn't want to touch it. Thomas McGahee, a special teams coordinator under Ron Rivera. He was offered the special teams job. He didn't take it. And so, yeah. And Chris Tabor was a good hire. I don't want to dump on.
Yeah, he's great.
And you know, Ben McAdoo, his resume, and same with Paul Pasqualoni, like they've done great things in this game, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Matt Rhule had to hire two guys, those two that I just mentioned, who were not on-field coaches last year.
Yeah, well, kudos to him for actually getting those guys, to be honest. Like, we actually thought the rearrangement in the background was pretty good given the dire circumstances. My last question goes to your final story that I'm going to highlight, and then Cody's got one more for you. And that is, you put up your second half predictions. And don't worry, you're not the only person who has overpredicted the Panthers' success this year. In fact, I think we were about the same, kind of that 8-9 type area, stuff like this. Yeah. Man, there were people. Silly we're us. We're a fan podcast. There's a lot of people that were like 10 and. But there, you gave 6 predictions. I'm only putting 3 up here for the fans to see, so I want them to be able to go check out the story on theathletic.com. And please go support The Athletic. We've got to support our look. Joe's been the guy for Charlotte in a revolving door of people who have been covering this team. So he knows this team for a long time, and he knows them through multiple GMs, multiple coaches. One, I think the Sam Darnold one we've already touched on. You put that you predicted Sam Darnold will start a majority of the games. We probably won't see Baker much more. Derek Brown's been a success story. I'd love to talk about him for hours, given the way people gave up on him too quickly, and he was fine the entire time, I believe. But last, this one stuck out to me. You predicted Wilkes sticks around past this season, and you didn't automatically go to head coach, but you also floated the idea of in some sort of assistant head coach capacity, defensive coordinator. And this is a kind of a, like a two-part question of the same thing is, do you think Wilkes has got a chance of winning this job, which we thought, you know, I mean, was a possibility, but it's getting harder and harder each week. And on top of that, if he does stick around in this non-head coach capacity, is that David Tepper being a puppet master? Because doesn't that feel like the worst thing to do when it comes to like piecing together a new regime, kind of like where you brought in Matt Rhule and then you brought in Scott Fitterer? Can't we just do it the right way, where the GM hires the coach picks the staff, and then the GM and the coach either have success and be successful, or they both get fired, and then we do it again?
Yeah, listen, like, I don't know if Wilkes is going to stick around. I do know that he has impressed people in the building. I mean, he already had people, you know, in his corner from his first tenure here. Who know him. And I mean, guys like Luke Kuechly go to bat for him behind the scenes. I mean, he really is well-liked and respected. Does that mean he'll stay around? I don't know. I do think that they would like to probably do right by Steve Wilkes, because he's sort of been given a crap sandwich here. I mean, no interim situation. I mean, the guy's fired for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough. Rich Bisaccia, kudos to him, man. Last year he pulled it off in Vegas and still didn't get the head coaching.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so I don't even know if Wilkes would want to stay if he's not the head coaching guy, if he's not the head coach. But I do think the team – I think it would have to be a fit with whoever the head coach is. And I referenced in that story, which you were very nice to reference. Of course, Tepper, a lot of his point of reference is the Steelers. Excuse me, because he was a minority owner there. Well, when Tomlin took over in 07, I think he was encouraged to retain Dick LeBeau. And he did, and they worked together for a few years and did pretty well together. And then, you know, Dick LeBeau kind of rode off into the sunset. So, I mean, these things do happen from time to time. And I'm not saying it will or it should. Steve Wilkes might have a better offer somewhere else. I mean, listen, Steve Wilkes still wants to get the head coaching job.
Yeah, you can see it in his face. When they lost on that, when they got that penalty with the on the Falcons game, I won't say look beat. I mean, look, as you could tell, he wanted it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it would have to be pretty incredible turnaround here over these last 8 games, I think, for him to have a legitimate shot. But he has impressed people. I can tell you that in the locker room and the front office with how he's handled this.
All right. Final question from Cody, and then we'll let you go. Oh, you're on mute. Oh,
my bad. Joe, we appreciate you so much for being on here. I feel like one of the biggest, one of the things that, that David Tepper has done that Panther fans have loved the most has really been aesthetics. You know, first it was the Panther in the middle of the field. Now tomorrow night, we're finally going to get the black helmets that fans have been waiting for so long. You know, even fans that think that the Panthers are going to lose so badly want us to win in these uniforms. What are the chances that you think the Panthers continue to, you know, implement stuff like the black helmets in more than one game, and maybe even some slight tweaks to the Panthers uniforms going forward at some point?
Yeah, Tepper certainly seems more open to that kind of stuff than Richardson. I mean, you guys know Richardson was very conservative, very, very much. I mean, they had the shield at the midfield. So yeah, I think Tepper's aware. I mean, he's also aware that you can go sell that merchandise too if you tweak the uniform or have a different color scheme. And he that they're not selling. Listen, this is a team that is not selling many tickets this year for you know butts in the seats
for obvious reasons.
And right, I am not being critical. If I were a paying fan, I wouldn't either. But my point is, if they have an opportunity to go sell something different and unique in the team store, then I think David Tepper is absolutely going to take that chance.
Did you see their top five in ticket costs, though? Like, we're a top five organization in attending a game, which I think is incredible. So, look, is a... tell them they're giving away a helmet on the website right now. There's a giveaway on the Panthers website. You can spin the little wheel or whatever. Tell them they need them better. They better be giving away more than one of them black helmets. They better give like 1,000 away right now. So thanks, Joe. First, everybody, I'm going to encourage everybody to go to The Athletic and subscribe. Joe Person, you've been on the beat for over 10 years now. My last, it's not even a real question, but is this are you going to get your blue check?
I've got one now. I don't know what Elon's trying to do, man.
It's going
to
be a tax write-off for you.
I got to see how the Athletic's going to play that, man.
I hear you. I hear you. All right, man. That's Joe Person with The Athletic. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Appreciate it, guys. Always, it's always a blast.
Awesome, man. Man.
Joe. Thanks, man.
Good stuff there. Everybody, please go subscribe to The Athletic.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And support your content creators. Now let's go to our next guest who's been waiting patiently. Thank you so much, Will McFadden, from host of the Believe in Falcons podcast and writer for The Falcoholic. Welcome back to the C3 Panthers podcast.
Oh, it's good to be back, Tony. I appreciate you welcoming back on.
Yeah, man. Look, is kind of a bizarre situation, not kind of, bizarre NFC South. But we've been here before in 2014. Is in 2014, it was who doesn't want to win? In fact, actually, I almost feel like it's to that point. It's like we don't want to win. But now the Falcons have been frisky. You guys, that's what I've described you guys as, a frisky team, a feisty team all season. I always, when we walked into this year, everybody was dumping on the Falcons. I mean, I'm telling you, is that they don't have any talent. They're going to be so bad. Even Panther fans, when we, and we're a disaster, Panther fans were like, oh, at least we're not going to be like the Falcons. And I was like, hey, anytime that narrative prevails in the NFL, watch out. And I was kind of right, man. You guys have been in games. It hasn't always been pretty. But you have it back down, and all of a sudden you find yourself in, or what, or is it tied for first or in first right now?
Currently tied. With a win Thursday or tomorrow night, you know, it would move them to sole place of the division. But Tampa Bay currently holds the tiebreaker. So okay. Any kind of tie with Tampa technically puts Tampa ahead. So the Falcons, I think, are eighth right now in the playoff seeding. So they're just out of the playoffs because of that tiebreak. But it's really interesting that you mentioned the expectations, because I just earlier this afternoon kind of recorded the intro for my podcast that's going up tomorrow. And I compared Atlanta's situation to Indy, and obviously the big Matt Ryan connection there. But it's when Indy traded for Matt Ryan, it was kind of like, oh, here's the missing piece. Now in a really good AFC, are the Colts kind of dark horse candidates and all of that, you know, good stuff. It's like they finally got the quarterback that could maybe put him over the top. Obviously that didn't happen. Obviously no. It went as wrong.
I was so wrong on that. I was drinking that Kool-Aid, bro.
I was too. I think I picked them to make the Super Bowl, which is like drinking.
Well, I wasn't drinking that much.
It's
but
drinking
okay.
the most Kool-Aid, right? And that's obviously like coming from a Matt Ryan perspective as well, and having covered him and thinking very highly of him. But it all goes to like previous expectations and how they color all of our opinions going into the season. And yep. Every year just proves that it's totally different. Nobody would have ever believed that Cincinnati would have been in the Super Bowl last year. Nobody Correct. Would have ever believed that Atlanta would be tied for first place in the division going into
or that
week
10. Minnesota would be great this year.
Or that New York would be winning, or that Seattle would be winning.
That's
year.
Even, yeah.
Really,
the NFL teaches us this, right? So it's kind of like, we should stop being surprised, and we should stop making all of these, like, basically all the teams that made the playoffs last year are going to be the teams that make the playoffs this year. It's just not that league. And so it's really exciting for the Falcons to be where they're at, but the Panthers gave them a hell of a game, you know, the last time they saw each other. So I'm a little bit nervous heading into tomorrow night.
What do you think the game plan is, you know, since we had such a nail biter of a game that essentially came down to two missed fields, so, you know, a bunch of craziness happened. But I noticed that there was, you know, there was this narrative going around that the Falcons just were not giving Kyle Pitts the ball enough. You know, do you think that has changed in recent weeks? And what specific matchups on offense are you looking for? Do you think the offense is going to be very Kyle Pitts heavy, or a mixture between, you know, Drake London and Cordell Patterson coming back? What's the recipe to a road victory for the Falcons against the Panthers tomorrow night?
Well, I think that any path to victory for Atlanta is going to start on the ground, first and foremost. And it should have been that case against the Chargers. I mean, the Falcons ran the ball 35 times for 201 yards. And ultimately, it was, ironically, the shots to Kyle Pitts that I think kind of ultimately prevented them from winning that game, because Marcus Mariota was just not effective moving the ball. And there were a few series, especially in the second half, where they kind of went three and out really quickly. And one of those plays on that three down series was a deep shot. And when you're averaging, you know, nearly 6 yards a carry, I think a lot of people were wondering, why were you taking those shots? But I think the reason is because they do want to get Kyle Pitts involved a little bit more. They do want to get Drake London involved a little bit more. And the way that the Falcons are going to try to pass the ball, it's suck everybody in with the run game. And then, hey, while they're all like worried about the jab that we're going to throw, we're going to hit them with a haymaker over here. And they're going to try to make their passing game count, because they don't rely on it a lot. So Kyle Pitts, I think, is going to be involved. The Panthers game the first time around was kind of his not coming out party, because, you know, what he did as a rookie, we know what he is. But it was his most impactful game so far this season for Atlanta was against Carolina and most involved. But then they went right back to him against the Chargers, and they tried to get him involved. It's just that Marcus Mariota was missing. The X factor in the matchup on offense is really, how does Cordarrelle Patterson and how does he in the backfield make a difference against a really good Panthers defensive line that I think did have an impact on Atlanta's run game to a degree. And if Marcus Mariota did not play really well at times against Carolina, especially to buy time, and then
it's like one of his best games of the year, arguably.
It was. Yeah. I mean, that and the San Francisco game, I mean, I think were rock solid. And so I think that Carolina would have won that game if Marcus Mariota had not played well. Now with Cordero Patterson back in the mix? Can he be a little bit of an X factor and maybe avoid a Derrick Brown in the backfield, or avoid, you know, a Shaq Thompson coming off of the edge to make that play? Because he's of an equal caliber to those guys, and Atlanta didn't have him last time. So that's kind of my X factor in this matchup.
How about this, Cody? A Falcons insider doesn't even know the greatest weapon on his team.
Oh, dude, he's about to go on this Demir Bird spiel, and Demir, I don't want to hear it. Bird. It's so damn dumb.
It's not so dumb.
A former Carolina Panther is definitely
not so dumb.
We also have a young South Carolina guy named Shai Smith, and me and Tony have been arguing who's the better prospect.
Oh, totally Demir Bird. You can't even Shai can't even hold his jock. So just remember that. Y'all watch. Demir Bird is legit. If you don't have him returning all y'all's punts and your kickoffs and all of that, silly. How is Corey? I mean, I'm telling you, dude, I've been at a game where this guy returned two to the house and caught a touchdown, and he's a walk-on, dude. I mean, undrafted, slight. He's great. He's done more than so many people. No one gives him credit. He's always fighting the bubble all the time, and he has caught more touchdowns than like half the people that Cody likes. But how is Cordero Patterson so good? I feel like he's been in the league for like 20 years, man. I know it's not that long, but it is. Like, I feel like we should be talking about Cordero Patterson. And who was the guy that always used to get migraines? Percy Harvin. Like, I feel like that's when I talked about Cordero Patterson, when I was talking about Percy Harvin. How is he? He's got to be in his mid-30s. He means so much to you guys.
He does. Percy Harvin is a great comp, first off, because I think that very similar guys, kind of these gadget, just uber athletic players, almost like Alvin Kamara was a little bit like that coming out of Tennessee, where he had no proven track record, but he was a freak athlete and he had more of a natural position. But yeah, I mean, Cordero Patterson is number one on my list of if you could just redo their career and put him with the right team kind of from the get-go. I think the way that he runs the ball is more comparable to a player like an Adrian Peterson than it is, you know, some of the modern running backs. Like, he runs the ball from a full sprint every single time, whether it is a dive up the middle or a toss sweep on the outside. He hits that thing full go, and it does have a lot to do with, I think, his background as a kick returner. You know, he's just used to being up and making all of these decisions at full speed. And what Arthur Smith has done with him over the last 2 years, maybe, in my opinion, like his signature accomplishment so far as a Falcons head coach. And obviously Terry Fontenot, I think, deserves a lot of credit in bringing him in, but so do a lot of the assistant coaches on the Bears staff. You know, Dave Ragone, I'm blanking on their former offensive line coach, or their running backs coach. Sorry, Dwayne Ledford is their offensive line coach. But they all had Cordero Patterson in Chicago kind of the year before that he came here to Atlanta, and they all vouched for him. And they were like, this dude can help us. And if we're looking to build a little bit of a Bad News Bears type of Mighty Ducks team over here, where we're just trying to get the most and the gumption and bring it all together with duct tape, like, Cordero Patterson is an underrated asset that we could really use on our team. And again, like, that's why I think he kind of picked right back up where he left off against the Chargers. He looked great in the first 4 weeks before he went down with an injury. He had two games over 120 yards, I think, in that span. So yeah, the Falcons' ability to use him, I think, is going to be huge. But Demir Bird, he's been playing great as well. So it's a good pull there, Tony.
Don't tell him, Dad. You don't have to say that, dude.
He's been a guest on this podcast twice. So.
Nice. Yeah, so, we can't say the same for Brian Edwards, a former South Carolina game.
Is he the guy that you got from Las Vegas?
He is, yeah.
He was good. You know, I overdrafted him in a fantasy league a couple of years ago, thinking, oh, man, I got wooed by that preseason. That preseason can woo you.
He and Alshon Jeffrey, man, coming out of South Carolina, I was like, these guys are going to be stars.
Yeah. So, well, to flip it to the other side of the ball, to the Falcons defense, And shout out to Falcons Rise Up. He's a frequenter of our chat and all the other Panther chats. What I wanted to ask is this, because we've been having these conversations about our quarterback. And part of the reason why PJ Walker still has the starting job right now is because of what he did versus Atlanta and how accurate he was. And that deep ball to DJ Moore.
Oh, beautiful.
I mean, and just work, you know, of art.
Amazing.
That was, yeah.
Seriously,
it really
frame
was.
It.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like we all knew that PJ had those flashes in him, but he's been so inconsistent. And then he has a terrible game against Cincinnati. So we're kind of wondering what our quarterback position actually is. There's also this notion that I've heard from some Falcons fans that part of the reasons why PJ was so good is because they were injured in the defensive backfield. They were missing AJ Terrell. They did have, I believe, like two safeties missing. How healthy is your defense going into this game? And how did you expect this match to be different defensively from what happened, you know, a little less than 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question, because not a lot has changed, right? It's such a short time frame that really what we saw is probably what we should expect, because the Falcons haven't gotten any healthier on the defensive side of the ball. AJ Terrell has been ruled out. Safety Eric Harris, who I think was available for the Panthers game, he's out. But Jalen Hawkins, I don't think was back for the Panthers game because he was injured in that game against the 49ers, if I recall correctly. He'll be back. He's a third-year player. He's played really well. He and Richie Grant have been the starters. Eric Harris has been a little bit of a Swiss Army knife, kind of coming off the bench as a veteran. They also traded for Rashad Fenton and traded Dean Marlowe away to Buffalo at the trade deadline. Dean Marlowe was one of the two, alongside with Rashad Evans, who gave up the DJ Moore touchdown.
Another former Panther, yep. By the way. Yeah.
Yep. And I don't think that had anything to do with the reason that they traded him. In fact, Arthur Smith, you know, said that it was had more to do with, like, I think it's a little bit of they were overcrowded at the safety position and wanted to just change up some of their depth and where it was allocated because of the injuries at corner. And Dean Marlowe is a former Bill. So it was kind of like, All right, we'll send him to Buffalo. They're having a great season. Dean will be happy with this, all that good stuff. But their two safeties will be there. Their corners will be the same as Carolina saw last time. Cornell Armstrong, D. Alford, Isaiah Oliver back in the slot. My main thing is not necessarily anything that's going to change defensively with Carolina. I'm curious to see if PJ Walker can put together another type of performance like that. And you mentioned his accuracy. Like, his stat line, 19 of 36, not the most accurate.
Yeah, he had such a bad first quarter.
Yes, but it was the 19 completions that he made. Like, each of those, or a vast majority of those, were awesome throws that really, I think, impacted Carolina's ability in that game. True. Like, he made each of those completions count in the biggest way.
And there was like two or three, maybe not that many, but there was one that DJ almost had where he had his toe tapping on the side. Yep. And it was like, so there was, you know, maybe three left on the field. That's the problem with PJ, is like, when he makes a play, it's incredible. It's just when he makes a bad play, it's horrific.
Well, that's the line in the NFL, right? Right? Like,
yeah,
it's the mistakes are going to be amplified, just like, you know, the successes sometimes, because the players all around you are better. So the variation is much greater than maybe in college or something like that. But yeah, if PJ Walker can, even if they rein him in, and even if it's not 36 attempts, if it's 25 attempts and he's 17 of 25, I think Carolina's got a good shot. It's not like Atlanta's defense. I think they're moving in the right direction. They're nowhere near Carolina's defense. They're nowhere near Tampa Bay's defense. They're nowhere near, you know, New Orleans' defense yet. So they're still the fourth in this division defensively. I think it's going to be more about Atlanta's offense. Can they control possession? Can they be efficient in the red zone? Can they put points on the board and keep the pressure on Carolina's offense? But that's kind of more, I think, Atlanta's path to victory than like an overwhelming defensive effort.
I got two for you, and I'm going to give you one at a time. Explain this Calvin Ridley trade to me. Like, it is, yeah. I've never seen a trade like this before. And obviously he's under suspension. I don't even know what his story is anymore at this point, is if he's suspended. He left at one point for mental health reasons. Like, he was like, man, I can't deal with this Falcons team no more. I got to go home. And then he gets suspended while he's on his mental health, while he's on a sabbatical. He took a sabbatical and then got suspended. But then he gets traded. And when I was reading the trade, there was like so many contingencies. I was like, I can't even keep up with this. I don't care this much about Calvin Ridley or the Jaguars to even invest brain space on it. Explain it to me.
Yeah. So his suspension is still ongoing. It's indefinite.
Indefinite?
Yeah, but the expectation is that he is going to be reinstated at the end of at the end of this season. Ahead
so
of next
incredible.
Season.
Cody Lashney's molester man can come back and play in 11 games or whatever. And this poor guy's like blackball. He's like the Pete Rose of NFL.
He absolutely is. And it's kind of insane that that's the case, because a lot of, fans, it's a little bit like, all right, he didn't bet against the Falcons. He was away from the team at the time. Like, there's no real impact, but
just give him six games. I mean, that's a big ass suspension, right? In the NFL, yes. Six games. I mean, like, we could have just handled this a long time ago and just been past it.
But the NFL, we've seen time and again, they like to make examples of players that they believe are kind of out at the forefront of issues in the league that matter to the league. And that's kind of the key thing, is gambling, the integrity of the game that actually
matters. As they're sponsored by FanDuel or DraftKings or whatever it is. I don't even know which one it is.
The hypocrisy is insane. So awesome. But I mean, we saw this with, just the way that they've handled the Josh Gordon case, like with marijuana. We saw it like Roger Goodell's very first real ruling was Michael Vick as a commissioner. And obviously, like, he took that as a way to set a precedent. And I don't think he's ever really moved off of that. When they're able to bring the hammer down for the first time, they usually don't flinch. It. Yes. Yeah. And so
until we take the hammer away, it's like, oh, I got the hammer. Let me smash this dude, because they're going to take it away from me in a second. But what was the trade? Is if he plays, there was three conditions to it. Do you know them?
Yep. So this would be if the Falcons, I believe, traded him for two future firsts, right? Future picks. Picks. Sorry, I'm reading to make sure.
I got you. I know it's confusing. I read it and I'm like, my eyes. I will tell you a movie, but you guys are too young to know it. But anyway, keep going. Beautiful Mind is what it thinks.
Oh, beautiful. Come on. Beautiful Mind.
I teach 19-year-olds, bro. They weren't even born during 9/11 now. Like, it's tough. I'm old. I'm turning 41 tomorrow. Friday. Well, I don't care. I mean, but like, it's not old, but gosh.
Well, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you. All right. So not two future firsts, two future picks.
Two future draft picks. And so it'll be a 2023 fifth rounder. It could be as high as a 2024 second rounder. However, that is contingent, like you said, on a few different things, right? So if Ridley's reinstated and makes the team in 2024, it'll be at least a fourth rounder. If he reaches kind of a certain amount of snaps or milestone of playing time that I don't think is public at this point in time and probably will never be, the Falcons will then receive a third rounder. And if the Jags sign him to a long-term deal, I guess before, supposedly the 2024 NFL draft, which makes sense because he's entering his final year of his rookie contract, then that becomes a second round pick. So if Ridley makes the team, it's fourth round pick. If he plays a certain amount of snaps, it'll bump up to a third in 2024. And then if the Jags decide, hey, this is the Calvin Ridley we thought we were going to get, it's a second round pick for Atlanta, and they sign him to a longer term extension. So it makes sense for both sides, because
why does it make sense for the Jags? It seems like such a long shot trade in so many ways.
Well, because Calvin Ridley, the expectation again, right, is that he's coming back next year. And if the NFL does anything unforeseen and, you know, decides to suspend him forever, like they did apparently Josh Gordon, like, then I think that'll be a very, very surprising outcome for everybody. The expectation is he is next year is back, and he fits, I think, more what the Jags are trying to do than what the Falcons are going to do. I kind of had my question mark about whether or not he was going to be with the Falcons regardless, even when he was reinstated. And so from Jacksonville's standpoint, it makes sense to do this deal now, because I think that once Ridley was reinstated next offseason, then you're in a bit of a bidding war potentially. And the way that we've seen the market for wide receivers creep up, Ridley's still going to be on his fifth year option as a rookie. He's going to be an old rookie, but you're paying $10 million next year for Calvin Ridley services, which is a little bit of a bargain. So I think that Jacksonville maybe felt, hey, instead of trying to compete against an open market with a bunch of teams and maybe like an LA Rams from 2021 that is all in and will pay $10 million for Calvin Ridley and give up a first round pick to get him, maybe they felt like if we do it early, we can get a little bit of a discount. And the Falcons, you know, may have just said, all right, this is an asset that we don't necessarily see being with us in the future. If we can get a future second round pick out of it and a fifth round pick, you know, immediately, then let's do it.
Just another example of brain dead Atlanta Falcons. Justin Hardy greater than Calvin Ridley. Justin Hardy greater than God.
No.
Man with the golden glove. He's an ECU alum. I'm an ECU guy and incredible. Oh, nice. Was rooting for him. My final question is this is, so when we were talking about like those preconceptions going into the season, what I think about this is when I look at Arthur Smith, which I'm sure you guys are pretty happy with what he's been able to do in his first, this is his second year, right? As a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you get pretty happy that he's put together a very competent team, given the circumstances. The way that we, I think, view you guys and we view ourselves is we view our team as a talented team who has underperformed. Like we have talent on the roster who has not met, who has underperformed the talent on that team. And I look at the Falcons and say, you guys have overperformed the talent on your team in a way. Why are the Falcons so talentless for an outsider who wants to be? I mean, like, we like this shit. The Falcons are my most hated team in the NFC South, right? Is Justin. The only thing that I've ever liked about you guys is Justin Hardy and Damier Bird. And I am the only person, here's my best joke, or one of my good jokes that slaps hard, is I'm the only guy in the world who likes Mike Vick more after the dog crap than before because it got him out of the NFC South finally. Why are you guys not more talented right now? Like why is it seemingly, even like we're talking about AJ, like it doesn't look, when you look at the roster across, you got great, what is it, Grady Jarrett? Yep. Always, man. Yep. And that,
Clemson,
like,
alumni. I get right, his name right, baby.
Not as good as ECU alum. Anyway, back to this. Terrell. Who? Why is this roster kind of? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just kind of dumping on it just because I don't like it, like you guys. Period. But why is the roster not more talented? Because Matt Ryan's not there sucking up the money anymore. Julio's been gone now for 2 years, I believe. Like, yes. Why? Like, where's the, what's going on? What's been going on?
Well, you say Matt Ryan is not there anymore. Well, his contract is. okay. He is currently the highest paid Falcon. And he is sitting on the bench for Indianapolis.
Which, didn't they bench him so they didn't have to pay him more money next year or something? I think that was part of his. Yeah, I think
that's Indy's call. Atlanta's on the hook this year.
He's making money like crazy.
$40.5 million is what Atlanta is paying him this year.
40.5 and he's paying. Oh God.
Yep. So Julio Jones is being paid $15.5 million.
Still from you guys?
Yep. Deion Jones is 11.8.
I guess we just answered it.
There you go. The Falcons have nearly $80 million in dead cap this season, which I believe is highest in the league. Jake Matthews is currently Atlanta's highest paid player with a cap hit of $15 million, which is teeny tiny. They have, again, two guys at least, who are not on the Falcons right now, who are counting more against Atlanta's salary cap than their highest paid player on the team. So that's the issue. But the reason I think a lot of fans and candidly, I come from a house divided. Half of my family is from North Carolina, from Monroe, from Charlotte. My grandfather, rest in peace, Bill Heath, was a season ticket holder from the get-go, right there near the, I believe, 40-yard line, kind of the very end of the front row section. Right when you walk through the mezzanine, you walk in, he's right there on the railing. So I've been to many Panthers games in my life. Like I kind of love this rivalry because of the family connections. My dad will text me, at least a Sunday or so throughout this season and just be like, the stark difference between watching the Panthers play and the Falcons play. You can tell the Falcons are going somewhere because it's kind of what he wanted to see with Matt Rhule and Joe Judge when all of this came together. And I texted him and I was like, you guys hit a home run. Cause I thought
Joe Brady.
Yeah. Did I say Joe Burrow?
You said Joe Judge, which
Joe Judge.
Don't worry. We need to forget all these names, period.
Yeah, we're
all
hired,
these
names like, at the same time.
Don't worry. So we don't even care.
Joe Brady though. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I thought that was such a home run hire, which is just tells you how dumb we are in the media, where it's like everybody who you're getting talked about the
we
year
get
before.
Into groupthink, man. I think exactly. That's what we get into groupthink on those things.
And so I think that Arthur Smith has done such a good job of understanding kind of how an NFL offense should work and complement each other and all of the different ingredients you can throw in. And what he does so well is just everything looks the exact same from the jump and five different things can happen. It's like facing a pitcher who is the exact same release, whether he's going to throw you a curveball, a slider, or a fastball up high in the zone. And it's really hard to figure out. And so I think that that's kind of what excites a lot of people here is the talent's not there yet, but they're figuring out the right way to run something that fits this team, that fits the ingredients that are on this roster and really make it hum. Imagine what they can do when they get some guys here that they can actually pay to count $25 million against the cap next year instead of paying that for somebody in Indianapolis.
All right, Cody, close us out. Oh, look at this. Look, first, this is wonderful. Is Michael Davis, again, patron saint. He said, contributing to Tony's algebra tutoring, he's making fun of ECU. just remember, ECU's got the prettiest girls and the best party in town. Promise you that. Come to Greenville, bro. I tell you, we do it different. We do it different than all of y'all, man. Greenville, Michael Davis, thank you for your support, Cody. Thursday night is the blackout game. It's the second game, or it's the final game between us and the Falcons. We've played the Saints once. We played the Bucks once. This will be our second game against the Falcons. This division is still up in the air. I am the last person on. Look, I hate that. It's not in the air for us, bro. I'm sorry. It's not. I don't even care if we win this game. Still not in the air then. Cody,
I don't even say that. No, I do care if we win this game.
I know better algebra. Y'all know some weird ass math, obviously.
Part of the reason why the Panthers are finally going to be wearing their all black helmets. I'm so excited for it, man. We've been wanting this for a long time. We're hoping to see it a lot more. Will, I appreciate you coming on. I'm just going to answer a real simple question. What's the final score?
Ooh, man. Well, I would never.
That's always the hardest question. How about this? He said it's a simple question. It's like, oh, well,
hey, it can be simple and hard, but I want to get your honest opinion.
Remember guys, the weather's supposed to be bad. Here's some things just to consider is there's some. Wildly, there's some tropical storm that's forming.
Yeah,
that's going to be coming through. I don't know if it's going to. My wife was checking the. I was like, I heard the weather's going to be bad, and this is important if you're like putting in prize picks or something like this. This is going to be a game that probably coming off of PJ Walker being 3 for 10 with almost as many interceptions as completions. You got to think the Panthers are going to want to go back to the ground game. Mm-hmm. And that is the Falcons' bread and butter, too. Arthur Smith will run the ball on like third and 20. He's like, I don't care. We're down 20
points. They'll run the ball if they're losing.
Yeah, down 20 on third and 20. Hell, and you know what? He's like, hey, you know what? We got 19. So tough question. What is the outcome of is this a Falcons sweep? Ooh, that's hard.
I think it is because yes. I think that on the one hand, this is what's so hard, right? Because I did not think that the last game was going to be 37 to 34. I don't think any of us did.
Nope.
And I don't think that you're going to get
another one of those.
I don't think you're going to get another one of those for the reasons, the weather reasons you pointed out for, you know, I don't think we're going to get the quarterback games that we got from these two. I don't think PJ Walker
both played their best games like of their career in a sense. At least for PJ.
Right. But it was certainly like one of their better games of the season. PJ
right.
was great. I mean, that throw at the end, again, just cannot say enough.
You about know, he's framed it. How about that? If you're PJ Walker, that might be, if things go bad for you for the rest of the season, it might be your end. You know, that is like that's like your profile pic forever. That's like, remember like when your grandkids come over, like everybody has to walk by and touch the picture on the wall.
Memory. So, Will, fun fact, that was the longest a ball has traveled thrown by a Panthers quarterback through the air.
No, by any quarterback.
They said it was since 2006. We haven't had a pass that deep.
Oh, I think the stat was this, Cody, is when they started keeping up with those ASW stats, like those advanced analytics in 2016. That's the longest through the air completion since they've kept up with that since 2016. And guess who the last guy that did it was? The guy that held the record before, because everybody on the internet loves to gotcha it. He's on the Panthers roster.
Is it Al?
Yeah.
Is it Baker?
Sam? And he did it against the Panthers with that pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones a couple of years ago where he dropped it in the bucket for the win or whatever. And it was 64 yards through the air. Crazy. Dang. Anyway, what's the score?
I'm going to say 27-17 Atlanta. I just think that, you know, it could be a little bit of a sloppier game, but I think Atlanta coming off of a loss, they're going to get some things tightened up. I think they're going to be pretty efficient in the red zone. And, you know, I think their ground game has been lights out, game in and game out. It does not disappear, and your run game travels. So I think the Falcons are going to be able to lean on something. You know, I think they're going to get a turnover or two off PJ. I'm very curious to see, you know, if things do start poorly for PJ, what is the leash like for him? Do they go back to Baker, given
and
what
they did?
And there's
kind of some weird things going on with that. Baker's upset, too.
Yeah. So I could see this being a weird game, maybe going into halftime, and it feels like it's something, and then I would expect Atlanta to kind of be consistent. They need to play a four-quarter game, and I think they'll start a little bit of a run here on Thursday night.
Cody, what's your answer?
For the final score?
Yeah.
I'm going 24-21.
Who?
Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
Oh, man, dude. I think you know, we kind of talked about it earlier with Joe Person. I don't believe Wilkes is into tanking and losing.
Mm-hmm. No one is.
No, but I'm saying it means something to him. And especially after how close that game was in Atlanta, and you're at home, and you're wearing the helmets, and it's a blackout game. Like, hey, it's time to put up or shut up, you know. But that's what's so weird about this, Will. The Panthers, we have the number two pick in the draft right now, but we're only two games out of first place. Like, I don't even know how often that shit has ever happened before.
Again, a beautiful mind math right there. That's ECU, dude, algebra. That's ECU algebra.
Right now. And, you know, so it's just going to be interesting to see what kind of fight they put up, especially after coming off of that shellacking that we took by the Bengals.
You know, that's an interesting point, though, Cody, is because one of the things that we looked at is that some people were asking, after the way we lost to Atlanta a week and a half ago or whatever it was, that was, did that deflate the team somehow, where they then had to travel to Cincy, and that, you know, kind of some sort of psychological, emotional effect of the way you lost in that game. And then interesting to that is that you're kind of trying to think about that is like, all right, we're coming off of this shellacking from the Bengals. You're talking about Steve Wilks not wanting to hang it up. But also the Falcons are coming off a difficult loss to the Chargers. And the question is how does that affect them in that same capacity? Do they respond in a way like, hey, we played a really tough team and had them down to the wire and blew it? Or did we, you know, or do they come out and do what we did? So also interesting storylines, even when the teams, or at least our team, is one of the least interesting teams that we've covered in a while. Will, thank you so much for your time tonight. Tell everyone first how they can follow you. And please tell Cam, thank you. Cam, right, man, this guy thinks of me. He will email me. He just, man, I tell you, for someone who's got 3 kids, career, extra jobs, all of this going on, he sends me an email. He's like, hey, you wanted to make this? I'm like, hell yeah. So please give him a super thumbs up for me next time you talk to him. Tell them how they can find your work and the work on the Believe Network.
Yeah, no, Cam Rogers is definitely getting a little Christmas basket from me this year, because
he's,
he makes
awesome,
my life easy as well. No, but I appreciate you guys having me on. This was a blast. Always love chatting about the I-85 rivalry.
Yeah.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Will McFadden. During the game, I'll be tweeting all my insights. I'm trying to tweet
less. Ooh, are you going to get a blue check?
I've already got a blue check.
Are you going to keep it?
Am I going to keep it? No, man.
Yes, you are now. Once you heard his Twitter Spaces today, go listen to Elon Musk's Twitter Spaces today. We're all going to have to pay for one if we want our tweets seen.
Yeah, I'm not paying it. See, that's the thing. That's what he missed. Like, journalists are the last people. We don't want to be recognized. We want to do our work in the shadows. I don't need that notoriety.
Lies. That's my lies. We all want to be recognized. We're begging people to watch our shit.
Okay. But yeah, go ahead and follow me at Will McFadden. It's the one with the blue check mark next to it, in case you
for now
you find it. I will have a show, Believe in Falcons, coming out tomorrow morning with Steve Wyche of the NFL Network, breaking down this matchup, kind of doing a mid-season check-in on the Falcons. So if you want a real quick summary of how the Falcons have performed up until now, in case you somehow missed the last matchup a couple weeks ago, feel free to listen to that. But yeah, all my stuff is on thefalcoholic.com, written wise, and that is it. Again, thank you guys so much. I really enjoyed
incredible stuff. Thank you so much, Will. Cody, man, we have had a fun couple of days, and guess where we got to be back tomorrow?
Yeah, right here doing this.
Yeah, the post game show. I think right now the brainstorm is to start it sometime in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so I'm down for whatever's clever, man. I would do the whole game if we needed to. I get Greg and CK probably couldn't do all that, but.
Well, Greg's going to be busy. I can do that. Like, I just want to make sure that we keep true to the post game. So I don't want to conflate entirely a watch along with a post game. I don't know. I'd love to hear you guys' stuff. Maybe let's do this. Let's plan on booming up the post game show when we start the fourth quarter. How's that sound? Good. We do a watch along at the end, and if it's out of hand, that will expedite the post game. And if it's close, you get some fun reactions. Dude, tonight, I want to thank everybody first who's tuning in right now. Look, 70 people strong. Please smash the thumbs up button. Thank you for the people that gave the super chats, man. You guys are incredible. So generous. But I want to thank you even more for your time. I mean, look, is that I know people will say to us is, oh, you're putting in your time. You're putting in your and we do. I mean, look, I told Miranda, I was like, you got to pick the kids up here. I did this. I took Michael to swim practice at 6 a.m. this morning after staying up podcasting forever. So, you can pick these kids up. But we give our time, but y'all give your time, and it's incredible. And that's more valuable than mine. So I want to thank everybody who's listening right now. We need each other. We need each other because this ain't going to – it could get harder before it gets easier. And, Cody, you said last night we know the reason why the podcast goes on and on is Tony. It's true. Y'all,
I know.
My friends. Y'all, my friends. I just want to hang out. I don't even want to end it right now, but
I don't
we
say
will.
Things that aren't true. And you know
well,
that.
Well, that is a lie, bro.
No.
That is a big lie. Hard. And we will not argue about it for 2 hours now, but that was a big ass lie. Thank you as well, Cody, for your time and being my best bud, even though you're the most stubborn, ridiculous person at times. I love you, little brother. Tomorrow night, C3 Panthers post game. Check out the podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher. Don't forget, we really want you guys to help us in this charity drive because I think this could be a cool yearly way for us to spend the bye week. Support charity, not make it about us, but also make it about the Panthers. Like, we want to always stay in our lane about the Panthers. And I think this is a cool way. Cody Lashney, are you going to get your blue check?
You might have to now
if you want anybody to see your tweets, because this is what he said tonight.
It's in a shadow ban. You essentially, if you don't pay for Twitter Blue, then your stuff isn't getting seen in comparison.
Or as much.
Or as much. He even said that if you don't have Twitter Blue, it's going to be like going through your spam folder in your Gmail.
Which is crazy because I have never looked at my spam folder.
Oh, dude,
so
never.
Like every tweet. So we were sitting here saying, oh, it's not that bad last night. And I was listening to Elon on the call tonight. And I was like, oh, shit. It's like, are we going to stay on Twitter? Because I love Twitter. It's my platform that I like.
Oh,
I like YouTube and Twitter.
Twitter is my shit. I spend too much time on Twitter. You know, I know that. But I do think it is a weird thing that they're deciding to do. I would hate for it to be a scenario where you have to pay for Twitter in order to get a usable version of it that isn't terrible. You know what I mean?
Right. My theory with this, Cody, is that it doesn't matter if you're a consumer of information on Twitter, but I use Twitter to put my voice out. You know, it's like, I really don't care what y'all are saying. I want you to listen to me. And so if I feel like if you are, some people look at Twitter for new, like, and I do the same thing. Like, that's how I check my news. I mean, so I consume just as much as I produce, but I look at it as a production platform in a way. Like, I am putting my voice to the world. Not everybody feels that way. So the people who are just consuming information probably won't need to do the Twitter Blue. Like, their shit will still be fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely for certain people. I had posted in the creator chat, our chat, or about a week ago, because I was thinking, hey man, maybe if we all get check marks, it lends some legitimacy to us. But then if you can just pay to get legitimized, how legitimate actually are you? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you're damned if you do.
I didn't realize that the bots were that wild. So, and I almost feel like Elon's using that as a slight, like a disguise for saying we just need to make money. Like, I just feel like he's like, oh, there's bots everywhere. And if we just charge you money and put a paywall up, we'll get rid of bots.
Yeah.
But it also feels like he's just saying, man, this company, I better make some money out of this quick.
Everybody loved him at first because they thought that he's going to be this free speech champion. That's what it claims to be. And whether or not that happens, like, I have no opinion one way or the other. I hope that he does end up continuing to do that. But, some of the business practices things, we're going to have to see, man.
It's about
never
the money.
Never put all your trust in a billionaire, okay? At the end of the day, you don't become a billionaire unless you're a savage and unless you're willing to, you know, kick dirt on the plebs that are out there crying. Yeah, right.
That's why I love Google and YouTube. Google knows how to use the plebs as their army.
CK says you got the blue check.
Oh, nice. Dude. I mean, we might have to just because I don't want to lose. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to abandon Twitter. Like, I can't go to Insta. I can't go. Like, I would just then be on YouTube. I hate Facebook. It's too clunky. It's so clunky. Like, I can't. It's just too much. Like, I have a panic attack when I look at Facebook.
Instagram for me is like only half naked women.
Oh, so that's my TikTok. That's my TikTok. Which I always, I'm like, you know what? Let me just look at some boobs real quick.
That's my Instagram. My, but my Twitter, dude, like I said, my Twitter's popped off ever since I started doing the podcast. I'm damn near at 2,000 followers. So follow your boy, man, at Cody Lack, CODYLAC. That's me right there up on screen. Follow the professor at @cat_chronicles. And
maybe, CK, do you want to do a simulation? I'm down if you want to. Cody Lack, been great hanging out with really good episode. We got Joe Person. Look, y'all man. Go subscribe to The Athletic. Let them know you heard about it on C3 because I feel like we're becoming a conduit of news where people like Joe Person goes monthly on WFNZ. We need those guys coming monthly on the C3 Panthers podcast. Because we're reaching the people.
We still need to get Dave Newton again. That was fun the last time.
Oh, he's the best. And Sheena too's a rising star. Yeah, no, David Newton's a superstar in my mind. All right, Cody, let's get out of here before I keep asking you questions.
All right, C3 Panther Nation. Until next time, keep pounding.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.